podcast that you hear me talking about a lot. And Hilda is not only a passionate advocate for holistic health, but also an expert in integrating ancient wisdom into modern life. She travels the world, learns from different cultures, and discovers timeless practices that nourish both the body and soul. In this episode, we're exploring Hilda's daily routines, the lessons she's learned from her travels, and the practical tips she's picked up along the way for living a healthier, more holistic lifestyle. From nourishing foods to mindful living, Hilda shares her invaluable advice for anyone looking to improve their well-being. So sit back, relax, and get ready to be inspired as we chat with Holistic Hilda, the voice behind the Wise Traditions podcast about living a life rooted in wisdom, health, and balance. I had so much fun sitting down with her to chat about all of these things. I'm out here on the homestead and learning alongside with my animals and food and all these daily activities, and to be able to speak with someone who travels the world and is learning from all these cultures, it was amazing. So I really hope you enjoyed this episode. Hey friends, welcome back to the Gubba Podcast. I'm Gubba, and today we have an amazing guest named Hilda. Hi.
Hey.
Also known as Holistic Hilda. And I am just so thrilled to have her here because I have been listening to her on the Wise Traditions podcast, and I have been just enthralled in all of this information and this wealth of knowledge that she has been able to bring to light and has changed my life. So thank you for being here.
Oh my gosh, it's my pleasure. Truly, Gubba, thank you.
Yeah, thank you. It's almost like a full circle moment for me because years ago I was listening to you on the Wise Traditions podcast and I was a vegetarian. And then there was an episode that you were doing and you were talking about vegetarian and veganism. And then it transitioned me into thinking about my diet. So it's so cool to have you here.
That's amazing. I'm so glad it's been a help to you. It has been to me too. I feel like, oh my gosh, what a privilege that I get to learn from these experts and then share what I learn with the world.
Yeah, it is really neat to have a platform like that. And I feel like people are really wanting to dive into this. And with you having such an amazing audience, I know where I was coming from, I didn't know about the holistic side of things. I didn't really know too much about diet, but I wanted to ask you in your journey as Holistic Hilda. So what inspired your journey into holistic health and wellness, and how did it lead to the creation of Holistic Hilda?
Oh, such a good question. So I feel like my story starts before I was born, which sounds really funny, but it's true. So basically, the way the story goes is my mom was exposed to the German measles. And if you were expecting and you're exposed to the German measles, the doctors are sure that your baby is going to be born with a serious birth defect. And they told my mom so. They were like, oh my gosh, your child will be blind or deaf or unable to speak. And they even suggested she not have me at all, Gubba. So this is one reason I love life so much because I'm so happy to be here. My mom was like, no, we're going to have this baby. And when I was born, they didn't notice anything at first, but then they detected a heart murmur. Basically, there was a hole in my heart between the lower two ventricles. And they weren't sure, like, would it heal on its own? Would they have to do surgery? So they monitored me for years. So in this way, I actually have a fine appreciation for allopathic medicine because they were suggesting that I couldn't live a very long life because my blood wasn't oxygenating properly. So they were like, we have to do surgery. So when I was 9 years old, they did open heart surgery on me and they totally sawed open my solar plexus. You know, they put my body on ice. They sewed up the heart. They put it back in me. They sewed me back up. And they were like, okay, now you can do whatever you want. Because before that, I was like kind of cautious. They didn't know what my activity level would be and how it would affect my heart. Anyway, they were like, you can do whatever you want. I was like, oh my gosh, I can do whatever I want. What do I want to do? So I wanted to, first of all, thank God, because I felt like he spared me. It could have been so much worse. And then the second thing I wanted to do was make sure my body would stay as strong for as long as possible. So that's when I started getting into fitness, you know, not when I was nine right away, but I started like testing out my body's limits. And then I was like, hey, I like this movement thing. And that's how I got into the health and wellness space. But it was just from that vantage point. I was just like, okay, move it, or lose it. Like, it doesn't matter what you eat, all the other things I didn't have any idea about. So then what made me Holistic Hilda actually was my curiosity, I think. I was like, wait a minute, wait a minute, wait a minute. Maybe what we put into our bodies does matter. And by the way, I had four kids in like 5 years. And when they were little, they were always hungry. They were like coming home from school and they wanted a snack. And I was like, okay, here's your pretzels. And then they wanted another snack. I'm like, here are your apples. And they wanted another snack. And I was like, oh my gosh, how many snacks do these kids want? I didn't realize they were actually just hungry because they weren't being truly deeply nourished. So when I happened upon the Weston A. Price Foundation, I was like, okay, this information is amazing. It points to ancestral ways of living and eating that are so nourishing, that have served humanity since the beginning of time. I was like, I love this. And this is a short story, by the way. I love this. I want to start a podcast for them. And I approached them, and Sally Fallon Rail said, yes. So now we've been like working together. I make the show for the Weston Price Foundation, and I feel like I'm helping people return to wise traditions because it's the best way to get healthy again.
Wow, Hilda, I only knew just a little bit of that. That whole entire backstory of how it's been intertwined since even before you were born. And what I love so much is that you weren't afraid to push the boundaries or like ask questions when you're saying, like, well, what's healthy for me? Like, what are my limits? You didn't limit yourself. That's what I was hearing. And I find that really inspiring to whoever's listening right now, like, to not limit yourself because you don't know where it's going to land you. And like you said, you had your kids who were constantly hungry, and then you're like, okay, like what am I missing here, you know? And then you stumble upon the ancestral wisdom and start wise traditions. So if that's an amazing message for someone listening today, is don't be afraid to ask those questions or to push those boundaries.
And then even with the podcast, I was pushing boundaries, Gubba, because I had never hosted a show before. I was a director of communications for a fitness group. I was a worship leader for years, so playing the guitar in front of a congregation. I knew how to communicate, but I had never gotten a microphone and recorded and all this. So the foundation put a lot of trust in me, which I was thankful for, but I also was willing to see, hey, let me see what I can do. How hard can this be? I'm just going to ask questions. And the show has done really well. And we're kind of coming up on year 10. And I'm like, what the heck? I am so thankful. Because the other thing is, talk about pushing past limits in this sense too. I was like, you know what? Dr. Price, for whom the foundation was named, traveled the world in the 1930s looking for the healthiest people on the planet, right? He was like, also very inspired. And he was like, I want to find out what they're eating. How are they so hale and hearty? He got National Geographic magazine in his dental clinic. And he's like, these people look amazing compared to the people that I'm treating in my clinic. The people in his clinic had crowded teeth and cavities, poor behavior, poor posture. And he got this magazine. He's like, these people look awesome. So I want to go find them. So for 10 years, he went all over the planet looking for these kind of untouched, isolated people groups. So he went to Switzerland and, Australia and Alaska and the South Sea Pacific Islands, all over the place. And everybody was eating different things, but they were all eating local, seasonal, traditional, nutrient-dense foods. And so he wrote his book. And I thought, okay, I want to actually follow in his footsteps. Once I got going with the foundation, I was like, hey, you guys, I was like, send me everywhere. So they sent me a few places. And I was like, this is amazing because there are still people holding to their traditions, even though the tug of modernity is strong. When I was with the Maasai in Kenya, I literally was sitting in a small, modest home with a woman with her traditional Maasai clothing on, bright colors, the beaded jewelry, all the things. And in one hand, she had a chai tea. And in the other hand, she had a white bread jelly sandwich. And I was like, no. Because on the one hand, she had her traditional clothing, but she was stepping away from her traditional foods. But her people, they had one foot in modernity and one foot in traditions because I saw them drinking blood and roasting a goat, over a spit. So, like, they were still doing some things, but they were also getting that tug of modernity. But when I left Gubba, they said, starting today, we are going to cook our traditional foods. They like made a little vow. And it's not because I was, really saying all these things to change their minds. I was telling them about wise traditions. And I said, eat the way that has served you since you can remember. And they were like, okay, we're going back to that. And then I went back a year later. This was in 2016, and they had made some shifts. So it was marvelous. So these wise traditions, I love them because they don't belong to me. They don't belong to the foundation. They belong to the world, and we're all rediscovering them together.
Wow, that is so impactful to think, first of all, that you're able to travel around for the Weston A. Price Foundation. That is so cool to like follow in Dr. Price's footsteps. I got his book when I was starting to learn, and looking at the photos of the indigenous people and their teeth, and you're like, wow, they're so straight, like you were saying. That really took me. But for you to be able to go and sit with a woman and see how kind of this, standard American diet or this modernity is just creeping in, it's like, wow, the
Yeah.
disconnect. Because we have such a disconnect here in America with our food, very obvious. But for that disconnect to creep in, even into all corners of the world, I am so elated and happy to hear, though, in your story that the return to those wise traditions can happen. If it's happening in the corners of the world, like it can happen with us.
Absolutely. And I'll never forget on that trip in 2016, I also ran into a professional in the city of Nairobi in Kenya. And she said to me, Hilda, what you're describing, I've experienced. She said, I've been in the village with my grandmother where she is strong and she's weeding the garden and planting things and carrying sticks and stuff. And she goes, and then I come back to the city and I see how sick and weak we are here, in part because we're not getting the connection with nature, but in part because our diet has shifted. And she said, the modern chicken inn, it's what they call it over there, like a and Pizza Hut kind of situation. She said those things, they tug at us because we see movies or we see content that makes it seem really posh. That's the way she put it. She said it seems really posh, but it's actually making us sick. And she told me, in the next few days, I'm going to the hospital to figure out what's going on with my digestion. So she was experiencing the ramifications, the physical degeneration that Dr. Price talked about in real time. And so she could understand the contrast and how we need to look for ways, even in our modern lifestyles, to return to those wise traditions.
And what you just said too about how she was experiencing those modern ramifications from that modern diet, we have digestion issues that I feel are normalized, right? You have all these digestion things that are then labeled when you go to the doctor, you get on a medication, it's never really fixed, your diet's not really looked at. We have a lot of mental, we have there's a mental crisis going on, and it's like, can we look at our food? Can we just take a step back? And I find that so fascinating because the disconnect goes so deep, like what you're saying. And for her to go to the doctor, like all this is just coming full circle. And all these stories that you get to witness, I'm just out here on my homestead and I've experienced it personally because when I was vegetarian, I was constantly bloated. I mean, constantly bloated. And I had a friend tell me, like, hey, like that's not normal. And I'm like, well, I'm eating the plants, I'm doing what I should be doing according to the agendas that got me to be a vegetarian in the first place, but I didn't realize that I wasn't doing my body good until I started eating this wise traditions, this ancestral food diet. And
Yes.
in thinking about you traveling, like I see where you go on social media, you post, and it's so cool. I love following it because I don't get to travel much. What would you say off the top of your head are some of the most impactful and powerful lessons that you've learned from some people's? I know you've just shared some, but if there's any that come to your mind right away.
Two places come to mind and two people groups. So when I was in Mongolia, I got to be with the Kazakh eagle hunters. This still blows my mind. So my friend Mary Ruddick invited me to go with her to Mongolia. And these are people who live in one of the most harsh environments on the planet. Mongolia is in between Russia and China, and it's very, very cold there, basically, and very sparsely populated. So you can look for miles at the horizon. You don't see another gur or yurt or any dwelling, within your vista. It's just crazy. And so I met these people who have very difficult lives, and yet they looked well. They were resilient. Their faces were ruddy, not from like acne or eczema, but because they were exposed to the elements. Like I said, it's cold there, so they had flowing robes made of natural furs and things that would protect them from the cold, but also they would still have some exposure. And I think what really struck me was how movement, and especially and experiencing the elements, were part of their day to day. And as you know, Gaba, not all of us live on homesteads. And so we have to be intentional about moving. We were made to move. If you have to go to a gym, okay. But if you can walk outside, you're kind of stacking your hacks, you're getting movement and experiencing nature, which lowers your cortisol levels and kind of reminds you who you are. You know, we're just living these almost, dare I say, like space station lives. It's like we're all, you know, astronauts. We look at them and we're like, oh, it's so sad. They lost bone density when they were in outer space and they came back and they're sick, you know, if you even believe all these things. But anyway, but for us, we're living unnaturally in our very homes. We are disconnected. We don't see the sun except for the 5 minutes it takes us to get to our car and then get to the office and then home again. Like it's crazy. And so even if you don't live on a homestead, I want to encourage the listener to do what you can to experience the elements. It will make you resilient. We are far too comfortable. So that's what I learned from the Mongolians. And then what I learned similarly from the Peruvians was that by getting outside, you also can benefit from the energy that sun has to give you. And I know you've talked about this too. So sunscreen we're told to put on to protect us from the sun. But what if it's the opposite? What if we need to actually get more of the sun? Skin cancer, I've been told by people who have studied this to a degree greater than myself, they've said that the people more likely to get skin cancer are those exposed to more artificial light, not more natural light. So we need to be curious, like you were suggesting at the beginning, but also consider that what we're being told isn't necessarily the best thing for our health. So yes, get more sunshine on your skin as often as possible. Get more of that natural energy. Some people liken the sun as a multivitamin. It's like a multivitamin in the sky. Get more of that in your life and move more.
I love what you're saying that even in our homes, it's not just our food, but we are disconnected on a level where we're inside, we're under artificial light, we have constant blue light hitting us. I mean, that is the norm when we're out and about. You have the LEDs everywhere, you're only seeing the sun, like you said, when we go to our cars. So there's this deep-rooted disconnect that, I mean, we think of our ancestors and like the Mongolians that you went and visited, that they were out in the elements. And they were experiencing their local weather, and which I feel like is so important. Like your local realm, it's important to your diet, your gut, I believe your skin and everything. But to think of how we can bring that back. So we've kind of talked about how we can bring food back in with our ancestral diet, but what are some everyday practices that maybe you employ to bring in this connection to our surroundings?
Yes, it's so important. And this isn't just a kind of wishful thinking, you know, trying to be more crunchy or something. It's actually really important. And it's backed by science that the sun informs our biological clock and sets our circadian rhythm. And we just think, oh, I guess I need to pop some melatonin to sleep deeper. I mean, I have a friend who's, you know, trying to get out of her rhythm with Ambien and stuff like that. Like it's happening, right? It's part of our modern lifestyle that we're surrounded by the artificial light, and then we wonder why we can't sleep at night. So I have this practical suggestion: sunrise before screen rise. So get the morning sun before you start scrolling, before you get on your devices. I'm not saying your whole day is going to be outside in nature, though it would be lovely if it could be. But if you at least start your day with that morning sunlight, that message is sent to your brain. It comes to the suprachiasmatic nucleus, and that is the master clock for the clock in every cell in your body. So your body understands what time of day it is. It kind of sets the hormone movement and connections in motion. So you will know when to produce melatonin and when to release it for more profound sleep. Your metabolism may change and your energy. I think it's better than a cup of coffee. So I always get the sun. I try to get the sun spectrum actually between 30 to 45 minutes of sunrise, which means if sunrise is at 6:45, like it is where I live, I will get up, let's say at 7, and I'll get outside by 7:15, and I'll be outside at least 15 minutes because that time of day has a certain spectrum of light that's especially healing and helpful. So that's what I would do for that. And then for movement, this is where I stack my hacks. I actually walk every morning for 45 minutes, so I'm not just out there for 15. And what I do, which challenges my resilience, but also kind of stimulates my mitochondria for better health overall, is I'll do shiver walks. So right now the temperature is about, I don't know, 45 degrees or something. So if it's 45 degrees, I'll go for 45 minutes without, you know, a sweater. I'll just have a tank and some shorts. But if it's like 35 degrees, I might do 35 minutes. So I try to be smart. I'm not trying to get hypothermia, but it really It stimulates my mitochondria. And some people say that sickness is due to mitochondrial dysfunction. And mitochondria, just to be clear, are like the little engines in each cell in the body. They produce energy. So if you're feeling lethargic, it could be that you just don't need a cup of coffee or a muffin. You might just need to stimulate the mitochondria in a way that really helps you feel more alive and then benefits you in the long run.
I love what you're saying with waking up to the sun because that is like the wake up alarm. I feel like everything that you just said, the sun stimulates us. And we recently just had the daylight savings. I don't know about you, but that always just throws me off when the clock gets changed because I'm like, oh, my internal's not lining up. But something I've done recently that has helped my clock, I feel, is I replaced my little night light next to my bed with a red light. So
Yes.
I set my phone down about an hour or two before I'm going to bed, get everything done, and I'll turn on that light. And I'm not, it stimulates something. It feels peaceful and it helps me get into that sleeping rhythm. And then I try when I wake up to stimulate, if the sun is out, it's very cloudy here now, to stimulate myself with something outdoors, where even though it's cold, I will still go and put my feet barefoot on the ground for a little bit in the morning because I feel like that energizes me because we're so connected. I feel like it's about that connection back to earth and talking about all these things. So you're talking about the shiver walks, which are fascinating, and going outside without a sweater when it's cold. So for someone who's just starting out, and that might sound a little overwhelming, or they're listening to, oh, I don't want to replace my light bulbs with red lights. That's kind of crazy. Like somebody might look in my window and think, what's going on there? What are some practical tips that you have to help somebody who's just starting out and wants to engage in this kind of lifestyle?
I will give practical tips, but I also want to say this. How bad do you want this? Do you want to continue to suffer with sleeplessness or headaches because of all the time you're spending on the computer? You know, I've seen all kinds of studies that explain why we need more natural light or why we should get outside and get a little cold and stuff like that. But I always say N equals one, meaning you are the most important person to determine what's going to work for you. So yeah, you can keep complaining about your aches and pains or your headaches or your lack of sleep or your anxiety, or you can do something about it. And that's when, if you're willing to, you might have to raise some eyebrows. I have been wearing blue blocking glasses at night, which I think is actually a simple tip for getting started. If you're like, I'm not going to change all my light bulbs. Heaven knows I love to watch my Netflix at night. Well, okay, fine. This is a simple thing. You just toss on some glasses. You literally can get kind of welding glasses off of Amazon. I also sell a few little glasses on my site, but it's not about that. It's really just about finding a way to mimic what our ancestors had. And it's exactly what you said earlier, Gaba. It's red light at night. Why? Because they don't have electricity in Mongolia. There wasn't electricity in some of the most remote places I've been in Ethiopia, but they have fire at night. And that spectrum of light is incredibly soothing. It's amazing for our brains, for our parasympathetic nervous system. It's like you can relax. If you're on your phone till right before you hit the hay, no wonder you're still like feeling wide awake because that blue light and even touching the phone a lot is giving you a charge that's keeping you awake. So follow Gaba's advice about setting your screens aside for a little bit, but also consider just getting some blue blocking glasses. It's really simple. They don't have to be expensive. I do like Ra Optics too, but that's very high end. So if you want to go bougie, go Ra Optics. That's RA Optics. Or just go on my website and get a pair of $35, $45 ones. But the point is, you need to do something about your light environment because your body is sending you signals and it's important to pay attention to those.
That is so important. I love that light. Like, it almost sounds to somebody who doesn't know anything about this that it's almost kind of woo-woo, right? Like, if I would have heard this 10 years ago and someone was like, oh, light really affects you, I'd be like, what? Like, but when you break it down and you have the red light and the blue light and you have all these just fake lights, I can feel it now when I've really paid attention. LED lights, like they bother me. Like, my body feels bothered and I don't like having them on. When I turn that red light on in the evening, like I feel relaxed. I feel more relaxed. And so your body's telling you. So it really is building this connection with our environment, building this connection with our food, but also everything you've been talking about is building this connection within ourselves, being connected to our body, I feel
Yes.
like is the ultimate connection. And I want to ask if you have any other daily practices that you have that you feel help you connect to your body? Because it sounds like you have a lot of really amazing things that you do. And I know people listening want to learn more.
GABA, I feel so healthy and happy and comfortable in my own skin in a way that I didn't probably 10 or 15 years ago before I started doing all this stuff. Again, as I spoke to experts, but also as I started applying some of these, what I call ancient secrets, and then seeing them played out in different parts of the world, I've just been astounded by how kind of rejuvenated I've been. So that's why I don't need all the studies. I'm like, I'm just living this baby and I love it so much. So some other things I do is I do honor my sleep, which goes along with the sun we were talking about earlier. I was a certified night owl. I used to think the minute my kids are in bed, now's my time to shine. I started doing laundry. I'd answer emails. I was like, go, go, go. And then I'd be up at 2 in the morning. I was like, why is everyone else sleeping? I didn't realize I'd gotten a second wind. And again, the artificial light from my computer was kind of stimulating my pineal gland and making me think it was midday instead of midnight. But anyway, so I was a health coach, girl. I was also a health coach, and I was still burning the candle on both ends. But now I've learned to pace myself. I honor my sleep. I realize, oh, the things I would do at night, I can do in the morning. So sunshine, sleep, shivers is what I call experiencing the elements. Sustenance, the food is really important. All the things, again, we've been told, like, oh, that's a heart attack on a plate when you're having, meat and eggs and butter. And instead, I know now that's actually saving your life. It's not hurting it. But when they designed the food pyramid and even my plate, they were looking at what Big Ag wanted to promote, which was a lot of grains. And so that's what they started telling us to do. They weren't really health experts giving us that advice. So I've looked at what stands the test of time, what served our ancestors well, and they were all eating meat. And actually, to that point, I'll just segue and say Dr. Price, who traveled the world in the 1930s, like I said, looking for these isolated indigenous people groups, he didn't find a single vegetarian or vegan culture. And this was his greatest disappointment. He was like, sure, he would, and he didn't. And then he realized, oh my gosh, people are all eating foods that are nutrient dense, that are packed with the fat soluble activators A, D, and K. And these things are critical for our hormonal function, but also our cognitive function, heart health, and all the rest. And so I think this is one reason I am in my 60s now and I am thriving. I feel 20, if not 25 years younger. It's just amazing. So, okay, so those four. And then the last two that matter to me are strength. Obviously, I keep to moving. I make sure to intentionally move every day. I even wear a weighted vest when I go on walks because I'm like, I need more of that bone density, baby. And I'm not carrying jugs of water like my friends in Ethiopia. So I'm like, what can I do to strengthen the bone density? And then the last bit that may be the most important of all, actually, is spirit. I think it's really important to look for things that let your soul shine, that make you feel happy. So we weren't just put on this planet to work ourselves to death or to an early grave or what have you, or just to do all the things right, but not enjoy the journey. So I, every day, write in my gratitude journal things I'm thankful for. It's just, it doesn't have to be elaborate. They're literally bullet points. I think I'm a number like 600, 700, whatever. Yeah, 6,752 or something like that, because I keep track numerically. But it's just fun. And I even write down things that I don't know that I'm thankful for in the moment. And this might be a challenge for someone right now, because I believe that everything serves a purpose, even if it's a lesson learned, even if it's a hard thing. Like, I think there's something beautiful in the highs and lows of life. So I'll write down things that are difficult by faith. So I find this practice really helps me stay positive and hopeful. And even when I lay my head on the pillow at night before I drift off to sleep, I review my day and think of what I'm thankful for.
I love that because I feel like that is a holistic way of going about life. It really, the mind, the body, and the spirit, and how they all come together. And that actually brings me ties into the last question I was going to ask you is if you had to challenge the listeners to do one thing today that you think could help them better themselves, what would it be?
Yeah, the things of the spirit really matter. And I would say, yeah, find something that brings you joy, whether it's playing music, reading a book, like don't forget it in the midst of the busyness. And if you have 10 kids around you and the thing you like doing is playing the guitar, play it with them, Like people, say, oh, my kids, I can't do it because of XYZ. There are a million reasons why you can't, but you still can. I always think there is a way. There is a way to make the choice that's going to lift you up. And I do think we were meant to enjoy the journey. So I'd say find one thing that you really enjoy and do it. Bring it back, whether it was ice skating when you were little or, yeah, even just reading at the end of the day. Find a way to incorporate it again. And I think that will bless you.
Oh, Hilda, I love that so much. And I resonate with that because I feel like we really are here to have joy. And like you said, not feel disconnected from ourselves and not be bombarded with, I feel like the news and the media constantly are giving us these negative vibes, but to find joy within ourselves. And then that resonates outwards. Oh, that's beautiful. Thank you so much. So I would encourage everyone listening to give that a try. Try that challenge. And then make note of how you feel. Make note of how you feel. And I just want to say, Hilda, thank you so much for joining us today. It was amazing. I love chatting. I hope that we had just an ex I want to say an exploratory conversation because I feel like we traveled around the world and really tied it back to us. So thank you. Thank you so much.
Oh, Gubba, it was my pleasure. And yeah, I would love to connect with you again. We'll have to do something again sometime.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much, and I'll see you hopefully soon again.
I hope so too. Take care.
I hope that you enjoyed this podcast as much as I did. You were able to take some bits of wisdom from it and apply it into your own life. If you have any suggestions for other guests that you would like to see on the Gubba podcast, make sure to let me know. And I just want to say thank you so much for spending your time with me here and with Hilda. And I hope that you have an amazing day, and I'll see you next time. Bye-bye.